Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. It's Friday, January 31st, 2020. Our guest on the show is Indra Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, who joins me every Friday with news and insights on publishing and reading. Welcome back, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So last week, Andrew, we spoke with you ahead of the American Library Association midwinter meeting in Philadelphia, where you finally got to see something you've wanted to see for some time now. You watched on Saturday as Macmillan CEO John Sargent explained to an audience of librarians why he's decided to embargo new release ebooks in public libraries.
Yes, you're absolutely right. You know, it has been a good 18 months since Macmillan first announced its embargo test on Tor ebooks, Tor, of course, being Macmillan's popular science fiction imprint. And at the time, Sargent cited this sort of murky impact. You know, data was showing that library ebook lending was having an impact on retail sales, apparently. But from the very start, Macmillan officials have either refused to comment or declined to even reply at all when asked to explain more in depth why they were pursuing this embargo policy in libraries. Well, last Saturday in Philadelphia, he had a 90-minute Ask Me Anything session with librarians that was, if you read my 2,500-word roundup, it was quite something.
In fact, before the session, you wondered out loud why Sargent was even making such an appearance. Did you get an answer to your question?
Yes and no. You know, what I really, really question is why do this session if your stated policy is not to talk to the media, not to get press for this policy, right? Because you know the media is going to be there. Specifically, you know I'm going to be there. And after months of avoiding coverage and not talking to me about this, well, here we are. And believe me, my story was 2,500 words because this was, to me, my one shot. At least that's how I looked at it, to get Sargent and the Macmillan point of view all out here on the record. And, you know, I have to say, it was a bad idea for Macmillan not to speak to the press about this. You know, for listeners who don't know, Macmillan and John Sargent really don't have an external communications team for this kind of stuff. So whoever was advising John on this, in my opinion, really blundered badly in telling him not to do any press or not to explain this to the press. Because one, all we've had so far is librarians very effectively getting their message out. And two, now that this is all out there, it had to come out in a halting, contentious, 90-minute early morning back and forth with librarians who've had 18 months to sort of marshal and organize their arguments. You know, and finally, if you're going to do this, you have to recognize the gravity of the situation. John Sargent is a really genuine, honest guy. And a point of personal privilege here, he's a really nice guy. He's very folksy. He's down to earth. He doesn't do presentations. So, you know, he tried to pull this off, this 90-minute session, as an informal session with no notes, no presentation, just him and a mic. I mean, he tried to do that is not surprising. I know Digital Book World this week announced that they were going to ban Macmillan from going to Digital Book World. And one of the things they accused Sargent of was waltzing in unprepared and disrespecting librarians. I can tell you that's patently untrue. Sargent had meetings with librarians all week outside of that 90-minute session. He was prepared for this session. He just doesn't like to do presentations. So it wasn't that he was trying to disrespect anyone. He just thinks that he can talk and have that suffice. You know, the fact that his staff let him do this, to me, I found surprising. And let me just add, this was not an ALA event, right? This was an event that Macmillan rented the room. This was a vendor-paid-for session. So apologies to Ronald Reagan, but John Sargent paid for that mic last Saturday in Philadelphia. But he didn't pay for mics for the librarians to line up and ask questions to speak. And worse, the room was a really large room and was set up with these tables in like a U-shape around a screen from the previous day's meeting. And for whatever reason, the Macmillan staff decided not to move those tables. So the room was half empty and the visual was just terrible. It looked like John was speaking to a packed room of librarians from behind barricades. And, you know, for the first time really speaking on this very, very contentious subject that has drawn all this media scrutiny from around the nation, that was just bad staff work. I mean, that was a bad visual. It was just not well organized. So I have to say it, you know, he needs a better media strategy around this. The charm offensive was not a good look in Philadelphia.
All right, then. So what did you learn? How was the talk? And do you think John Sargent made some points that resonated with his librarian audience?
Well, I'll point listeners to my PW report, which is online now for the blow-by-blow. But, you know, his arguments fell flat, I think it's fair to say. And as one librarian told me after, you know, I think both sides, both Sargent and the librarians, found the meeting to be unsatisfactory. Now, there were a few mildly newsworthy moments. First, Sargent told librarians that it was too early to tell whether the embargo, which actually went into effect on November 1st, was serving its function. He did say that the House, as he predicted, has seen a horrific drop in sales. Those are his words, horrific. And that's, of course, because they're not making these new titles available to libraries. Also, libraries are boycotting. One out of every 10 libraries or so are boycotting Macmillan titles. So that's probably going to extend this horrific sales drop out a little bit further. But he did say that it would probably take another 2 or 3 months to better assess the program. I'm guessing it's going to take the better part of a year before we really get a handle on the program. You know, he briefly recapped the rationale that he made in two previous memos. You know, not really. He explained them in more detail, shall we say, but why he was pursuing the embargo. He was expressing concern about what he sees as the rapid growth of library ebook lending and how that is creating an imbalance, this is his word too, in the publishing ecosystem. Not unlike the growth curve that Amazon created when it first launched the Kindle and then it priced new release ebooks at $9.99. He insisted the embargo wasn't meant to punish librarians, or libraries, I should say, but it was an honest effort to correct that imbalance. And to restore balance, he said that he really only had two levers, pricing and availability. And with library ebook prices already high, Sargent said Macmillan executives did a little math and they concluded that maybe the better way to go was to tweak the availability lever a little bit. So an embargo seemed worth the shot. The other newsworthy moment is that Sargent confirmed for librarians what we've assumed all along, that Amazon data is a key part of the mix here. And Amazon has both sides of the data, Sargent said, noting that Kindle, of course, is the largest e-reading platform, not only in terms of what people are buying, not only in terms of retail ebooks, but for library ebook lens as well, because they have an exclusive partnership with Overdrive, where Overdrive sends, when somebody wants to read on the Kindle, Overdrive sends the library user over to Amazon, where Amazon fulfills the lend and, of course, captures the data. But Sargent also made clear that, well, librarians, you're never going to see this data, none of the data backing up his claims, because it's all under very strict non-disclosure agreements. And as you might imagine, that did not go over well. In fact, Guy Gonzalez, he writes for PW occasionally, he's a former Library Journal guy. He now directs the Overdrive-funded Panorama Project, which is designed to gather data about the library market. He pointed out that the data being put forth by Macmillan is justifying its embargo is hotly contested by vendors and librarians, and he asked Sargent how Macmillan ever expected to get everyone on board with this idea or to try new things without some common data points. To that, I'm going to just say that I think data really isn't the point. Yes, I agree it'd be useful. Yes, I agree it would be very helpful. But in terms of this policy, if Macmillan officials had really done their homework with librarians, they would have known the librarians will never accept this embargo. Embargoes violate a core value of librarianship, equity of access. It's a non-starter. And at points, I have to admit, Sargent's arguments sounded, well, you know, kind of bonkers. I don't mean to disrespect him at all, but, you know, he blamed the curve, the alarming growth of ebooks and libraries on library cards that are too easy to get, and people who have too many library cards, and apps and technology, which he never named, with the sole intent of moving people from a purchase to a lend. And if you're in the state of California, he said, you can get a library card for every library in the state of California. And when a book comes out and you want it, you can put your name on every wait list in every library in the county. And that there's actually apps being developed to help people do that more easily. And that that's driving up the number of lens, and it's making the amount of money per reader reading a book go down. But come on. I mean, if you're the kind of person who would download an app and get library cards from hundreds of libraries, what does that tell you? It means you're never going to buy a book, right? That's not your customer. You're not losing a sale there. But at the same time, the idea that we're making policy based on what seems to be an extreme example, librarians were just left shaking their head.
And that is a very bleak tale you're telling there, Andrew. Anything good to come from this?
You know, I actually think so. You know, not only did librarians, I think, get a better sense of what was motivating Macmillan to explore this change, I think librarians now have a better sense of what's happening in the market. Many librarians that I talked to said that, you know, we share the blame here for not engaging on the ebook issue with publishers more forcefully in the last few years. And I think librarians now recognize that the broader challenge they face is Amazon. And that's something that I think has flown under the radar. I've heard it from librarians over the last few years for sure, but I think they now see that as a real pressing concern. And another positive thing, Texas State librarian Mark Smith, at the end of the session, noted that the embargo to him presents an opportunity for librarians to really think more deeply and creatively about what the library's role in the marketplace is. You know, why should librarians rush to develop a new model with Macmillan until they know how the experiment is going to turn out, right? Especially since other publishers aren't joining on at this point. Towards the end of the session, Smith noted that, you know, there's this material, this world of material in libraries besides what he says is big five content pushed by celebrity influencers. He thinks librarians can be influencers as well. And, you know, he wanted to take this opportunity, and he did, to urge librarians to see what else is out there. See if librarians can make their own hits, right? That they can work with publishers who want to work with them and, you know, provide just other reading material to customers. And I think that's a very important point for libraries to seize onto here, that there's a lot of stuff in libraries that they can share with their consumers.
2020 certainly hasn't opened well for John Sargent and Macmillan. The house's Flatiron imprint is the publisher of American Dirt, a novel that has ignited one of the hottest controversies in years for the bookselling business. And this week, a series of stunning developments for the book and the author.
Yeah, so this week, Flatiron Books, the publisher of American Dirt, which of course is the much-hyped novel about a Mexican mother and her son trying to make their way to the U.S. to escape a drug cartel, well, they canceled the remainder of the author Jeanine Cummins' 40-city tour. This was due to specific threats to booksellers and the author, which we're told, sadly, includes threats of physical violence. And Miller added that they believed that there were very real peril to both booksellers and to the author's safety. Bob Miller, of course, is the Flatiron's publisher. He acknowledged that the publisher was caught by surprise and issued an apology from Macmillan here, an apology that's drawn a little bit of flack on Twitter for not quite being sincere enough and being a little defensive. But Miller did acknowledge that the publisher was, you know, caught by surprise, and that the fact that the publisher was caught by surprise is indicative of a problem. They're trying to acknowledge how they failed here. You know, the discussion around this book, Miller said, is exposing, and I'll quote him here, deep inadequacies in how we at Flatiron Books address the issues of representation, both in the books we publish and in the teams that work on them. Miller also admitted to mistakes by the publisher, specifically in regards to its promotion of American Dirt. Our listeners may know it's been sort of put forth as like the grapes of wrath of this generation, right? Like sort of the Migrant's Tale. And that's drawn a lot of heat. If you're not up to speed on all of this, I would advise you to just Google American Dirt, and of course, head to the Publisher's Weekly site, where we've been reporting on this story in depth, including the author's appearance at the ABA's Winter Institute a week ago. We should also point out that Congress has apparently now taken note of the issue. Texas Congressman Joaquin Castro says the House Hispanic Caucus has requested a meeting with the Association of American Publishers in light of this story, and also a new diversity survey, which you can read about on the Publishers Weekly website, from Lee and Lowe, which shows that the book industry has really not made any progress in diversifying its ranks in recent years. But let me just say that unless there's a copyright angle in all of this, I'm afraid Representative Castro isn't going to get much out of that meeting with AAP.
So we have to ask, Andrew, because we are still waiting, where's that Audible caption settlement?
Yeah, you know, it's been over 2 weeks now and still no details at all. And it's quite interesting, I think, because we pointed out last week that the case is over. Judge Caproni dismissed it immediately about being told of a settlement by Audible lawyers. And the longer this goes on with no details, the more questions I'm starting to have. You know, my sneaking suspicion is that, well, you know, Audible is an Amazon company, and each of the plaintiffs has non-disclosure agreements about their contracts, and, well, Amazon's shutting it down. They don't want anything out there. And the other suspicion is that maybe this really isn't so much of a settlement as Audible actually doing what they said they were going to do, which is moot the suit. So maybe there isn't much here for publishers to celebrate. Maybe there's not enough here for them to put out a statement claiming victory. Of course, it could all just be delays in finalizing the details of the settlement. We'll continue to wait for something. We could very well see something in the coming days. But, you know, come on, it's too high profile a case for us not to have anything come out. So at some point, we got to hear something.
And when we talk to you next week, Andrew, you will be in Spain. And tell us, what are you doing there?
Well, I'd like to say it's all paella and sangria and wine, but it's our annual Pub Magnet meeting. Pub Magnet, of course, is a group of international trade magazines and journalists. We get together every year. Last year, I was able to host the meeting here in New York. And it's an opportunity to get a sense of what's going on in a host of markets around the world. We have members all over Europe and Asia. And it's usually a very fascinating meeting, and I'm sure we'll have plenty of to talk about next Friday. So I'll be there for the week. We'll be broadcasting from Madrid, Spain, which is where we'll be on Friday. So look for a little bit of an international flavor to our podcast next week.
All right. So we can even say it this week. Gracias, Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer. Thanks for joining me today on Beyond the Book, and talk with you from Spain next week.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming next on Beyond the Book, a video trailer for the recently published book boldly promises your adventure awaits. The collection of short stories builds on characters and plot lines set in the world of Draconis, a live-action role-playing game. Think Dungeons & Dragons come to life. But the players in this shared world game aren't only acting, they are also creating. When a trio of Draconis players living in the greater Boston area moved from the New England woods, where they go LARPing, to the online digital environment of independent publishing, they found another adventure awaited. In the world of the Violet Thorn, alliances are made and broken, and the imaginary becomes real. And just like the LARP, indie publishing turns out to require creativity, collaboration, and commitment to a shared world, says Bruno Tramontosi.
I just think the book and the game complement each other well, and it's a way for us to illustrate that we're established, that we've got a lot of lore that goes into games. You know, a lot of times when people want to play a game like ours, they want to know what's the world like, and there's a one-pager that sums that up. For us, we have literally a book, in addition to the entire series.
Building an indie editorial team, next on Beyond the Book. Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. Subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. The complete Beyond the Book podcast archive is available at beyondthebook.com. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening, and join us again soon on CCC's Beyond the Book.